A very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 9th December 2021, the Thursday class. We'll be continuing our sharing from this book, Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing, the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta. We are at page 41 of the hard copy, the PDF copy. 25, page 25. Okay, we'll off the light and you can have your usual half an hour of awareness space meditation. Just relax body and mind and maintain some attention. So this training is to stabilize your awareness nature within. That's why we call it awareness space meditation. So relax, maintain awareness for as long as you can until that nature stabilizes. Then the last support is trust your nature to develop the meditation. Do not allow the thought to come in to interfere. Another disciple who says that he did not finish high school or attend college is able to formulate more important questions. Buddhism isn't just concerned with scholarly erudition. In Buddhism, the emphasis is placed on cultivation, the actual practice, the application of the principles and attainment of true skill. For example, the sixth patriarch in China, the great Master Hui Ning, never went to school and couldn't even write his own name. And yet, he was able to lecture on the sutra and teach the Dhamma. Other people would read the text aloud and would explain it sentence by sentence. He perfectly echoed with the principles of the Buddhas and never stray from the Buddha Dharma's meaning. Why was he able, as an illiterate, to explain the sutra? It was because he had obtained the wonderful Dhamma of the mind seal of the Buddha and patriarchs. And so the Dhamma he spoke was wonderful Dhamma. After the sixth patriarch obtained the mind Dhamma from the fifth patriarch and the rope and the bowl, he dwelt with the hunters for 16 years. During that time, he worked hard at his cultivation and developed great wisdom. However, this involved bitter toil. He can be nervous and try to rush. If you try to do too fast, you won't attain your goal. Cultivation is like shooting an arrow. If you pull the bowstring too tight, it will snap. But if you are too slack, the arrow won't fly. So it is said, go too fast and you will trip. Dally and you will fall behind. Never rush and never dally. And you will get the right. Sorry, you will get there right on time. So this one is just an analogy that Master Xuan Hua quoted. It must be from the Mandarin sayings. It is also said that a mad rush forward means a hasty retreat. If you hurry in, you will hurry out as well. Hasty progress means hasty regress. Don't be like the mayfly, born in the morning and dead by dusk. Born fast, die fast. Cultivate with honest and steady effort. Go down the main road and don't take shortcuts. The main road is the six perfection and the 10,000 conducts. The shortcuts are the non-Buddhist religions, that promise quick progress, when in reality, they take you nowhere. Insist on cultivating the way in accordance with orthodox method. That is the wonderful Dhamma. The middle way is the wonderful Dhamma. If you stray from the middle way, it is also the wonderful Dhamma, but it is no longer the middle way. So this is Shenhua's way of expressing it. But when it comes to true principles of cultivation, you have to remember this. The cultivation needs to be carried out with understanding. That is the first one. Then you cannot be too eager to progress, to know. You have to be in a state of relaxed inner awareness with clarity to develop understanding. That's why cultivation needs to be done with understanding. Otherwise, you won't progress. Do not be afraid of spending more time initially to develop the understanding. Then cultivate with understanding. When you do that, you progress very fast. That's why for me, my nature is such, whatever I do in life, I will need to understand that thing first. Before I understand that thing, the big picture, I will not go in and do, because I know it will be meaningless, because I will not be able to resolve it or do it properly, because I don't know what was the intent. It's just like you have a project, somebody gave you a project or give you a task, but you don't know what that task is, what that project is, the background behind, and the detail of what you need to do. So it can be an engineering project, a building, to design, then to call tender, to construct, then to deliver the whole thing. Or it can be a highway project, or an engineering water supply project, to build a treatment plant, or a sewerage project, or whatever engineering project. So if you don't know the background behind, you don't know what that project detail entails, then how can you start? And you yourself must have the necessary skill, experience, and understanding to do it well. All this is what is required of cultivation. Means you must be skillful, qualified. You must have the understanding behind. Then you must have the full picture of what is it that you are going to design or develop. So all these understanding are very important. That's the reason why I always emphasize on this important aspect of understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha. If you want to do it correctly, properly, you must understand what that meditation is. What are the essential Dhamma that the Buddha taught? What are the true principles behind his teaching? So all this understanding is what you need. When you understand, you will do well, you will progress accordingly. So do not rush. So what is given here as advice by Master Shenhua is the standard middle way, where they say just like shooting an arrow or playing a musical instrument. If you tune the thing too high or too tight, then the string may burst. And if it's too tightly tuned, the music that come out through that vibration may not be the appropriate or most suitable one. Then if you do not tune it, it becomes too slack. It cannot deliver proper music at all. So, middle way is an example of not to die and not to slack. That's why they use the word middle way. So when it comes to cultivation, you also have to understand that if you strive too hard without understanding, then it's not the middle path. If you are lazy, indolent, you are not serious, you don't have the faith, then it's the other extreme. That's why Sakyamuni Buddha, in his first sermon, when he spoke that Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, his opening statement is very important. He said, avoid the two extremes. The two extremes of indulgence in sensual desire and self-mortification. So avoiding these two extremes is about the mind. If the mundane mind indulges in sensual desire or sensual indulgence, or the other extreme is to torment yourself with self-mortification, thinking that they are the way forward when it comes to cultivation. So if you do that, you will get yourself into trouble and tangled. So the middle path is not to indulge in sensual indulgence and not to cling on to what they call self-mortification. You have to maintain a proper body, a healthy body, with enough rest, enough food. Don't overeat. Then from there, you develop your cultivation. So if you do not hold on to the two extremes, your mind become beautiful. It is not holding on to sensual things, cravings and all those things. Then it's not there to mortify yourself and make your body weak and miserable. So striking a balance is what they call the middle path. Avoiding the two extremes is the same. But there is a deeper meaning. When you develop the cultivation, the deeper meaning of avoiding the two extremes is to transcend duality. Because when you understand how duality arises to the mundane mind, because duality exists within the mundane conditioned world. So to transcend duality is to go beyond the mundane mind, to realize the truth, to see things as they are, to insight into phenomena. Then when you can do that, the mind doesn't arise. That's why you need to be aware, mindful, in sati, to realize the truth. Because truth is beyond thought, beyond time. As explained by Sakyamuni Buddha in his salutation to the Dhamma. The salutation to the Dhamma, the Buddha chant. He says, Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo, means well expounded is the Dhamma by the Buddha. And what are the characteristics of this Dhamma? Then the Buddha continued to explain the characteristic. He said, this Dhamma is santitiko, can be realized in the here and the now. And this Dhamma is akaliko, beyond thought, beyond time. Then this Dhamma can stand up to investigation. Ehi paseko, you are invited to come and investigate into it because it's the truth. Therefore, it will stand up to investigation. Then this Dhamma is opanaiko, leading inward to our nature, to our heart. Then After that, the final characteristic is this Dhamma is Pacetang Veditabo Vinohiti, can only be realized by the wise, each for themselves. So if you look at this characteristic, then it will guide us in the cultivation. If the Dhamma I am seeking is akaliko, beyond thought, beyond mind, then my instrument to develop the meditation must be also of this capacity. If I use thought, which is not able to see beyond thought and beyond mind, then it will never lead to enlightenment in the here and the now, because this Dhamma is akaliko. So the instrument of meditation must be the nature, the silent awareness nature, which is beyond thought, beyond mind. So this understanding is very important. If you don't have this understanding, whatever you do is via the mundane mind, the thinking mind, thought-based type of meditation. That's why I try to explain and teach you all the awareness-based meditation. When you are aware, there is no thought. Awareness is before the knowing. Means, when you are in sati, or when you are mindful, it is an awareness nature. Before the knowing, before you perceive, before the aggregates of mind arise. So it's the pure consciousness before the content go in. So this understanding is very important. Then it must be sanditical, can be realized in the here and the now before you die. If people promise you a teaching that will lead to deliverance or enlightenment after you die, then that is not that Dhamma that the Buddha taught. But this Dhamma is sanditical, can be realized in the here and the now. Then you can investigate into it, means you can actually reflect into it, contemplate and inquire and put it to test. It's just like if you want to buy gold, true gold, you must put it to test. Because true gold, pure gold, can withstand the fire and all those things. So all these are the universal standards that we can apply to check whether our cultivation is in the right direction or not. Then the other characteristic is, does it lead inward into our nature? Does the understanding transcend the mundane mind and go beyond thought, beyond mind, so that it can be realized within our nature? This is what Pacetang is, leading inward into our nature. Then can only be realized by the wise. Once you awaken and realize, means you have the Dhamma. Before that, you cannot see the Dhamma. You cannot understand. Most of the time is knowledge. Knowledge based. So, Dhamma that are not developed to proper insight or awakening are what we call mundane, thought-based or knowledge Dhamma. They are not the true Dhamma. The true Dhamma is different, completely different. So with all this understanding, when we cultivate, we must have all this criteria of what the Dhamma is understood, then whatever people tell us or teach to us, we can put it to check. Am I doing with the correct instrument to realize this truth? If I start with thought, then can I go beyond thought? Find out, investigate. Because without awareness, the Buddha said you are as if dead. Because without awareness, you cannot be heedful. To be heedful, you have to be ever mindful, constantly meditating. Dhammapada was 23. So if you can't even develop sati to be mindful, then how can you stabilize it to be ever mindful? That's why the beginning of meditation is always to develop sati. For sati is life, the Buddha already said. Without sati, you cannot be heedful. Without heedfulness, you are as if dead. As I heedfulness is above to the deathless. The heedful never die. Dhammapada verse 21. So to be heedful, we need to have sati or mindfulness or awareness. Then we have to stabilize that and use it to cultivate. Constantly meditative means cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. So all this lead to understanding. Then we check the other essential Dhamma. Why did the Buddha taught us the five aggregates of form and mind? Why did the Buddha say they are not you? They are impermanent. They have these universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, anatta. If you attach, cling, and grasp, it leads to suffering. And because they are impermanent, it's a unchanging. It's not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can cling on to, grasp on to, and hold on to, and say, this is me, this is I. That's why he said, the self is a delusion. The five aggregate of form and mind is not what you think. It's not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why he teach anatta, non-self, empty nature. Where everything, according to the Buddha, after he realized enlightenment, is dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon. Because we live in a conditioned world where conditions are needed for things to arise, for phenomena to arise. So everything is dependent, originating, condition arising, causal. So this realization is very important. Then the other essential Dhamma that the Buddha taught is, he said, there are two categories of mind state. One is the five spiritual faculty. The other one is the five mental hindrance. Why did he call it mental hindrance? Yeah, these are mind states that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner awareness, and inner mindfulness. So when these mental hindrance arise, you cannot meditate. Yeah, it will hinders you. Hinders your mind from becoming peaceful, from becoming aware. And the cause of it is, the Buddha said, because you lack the opposite five spiritual faculty. That's why these two sets of mind state are complementary. Without the other one will arise. So for the other one to cease, means the five mental hindrances to cease, you must develop the opposite five to counter it. And they are the five spiritual faculty. That's why you must have sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya. And all of meditation start with that. Without the five spiritual faculty, you cannot be in the state of awareness. You cannot develop the meditative mind. Because this spiritual faculty prevents mental hindrance from arising. When you have them, you have faith, sadha, the first spiritual faculty, will make you calm, composed, with clarity. That's why sadha will remove doubt. Sadha will make you calm, peaceful, no longer restless. So the five mental hindrance of restlessness and doubt can be taken care of. Then virya is a spiritual tenacity to go that way, to cultivate this teaching, because The faith will drive you to cultivate. You see the beauty of this teaching, the importance of having this teaching, otherwise you suffer. Then when you have virya, you are very determined. You have a lot of energy to cultivate. That's why you have you overcome sleepiness, lethargic mind, sloth and torpor. And at the same time, when you have virya, you will develop the third spiritual faculty, which is sati, mindfulness. You will train yourself. Then when your mind has sati, it is beyond thought, beyond mind. It is just pure awareness, nature within, that can meditate, that can insight into phenomena, that can awaken. That is the meditative mind, that is your silent mind, that is your true mind. So realize that third spiritual faculty of sati. And when sati stabilizes, it develops samadhi. Samadhi is the unwavering mind, the collected mind that is unwavering, peaceful, steady. So when sati and samadhi are there, you can see things as they are, you can awaken. That's how wisdom come to be. And these five spiritual faculty, when they are there, you are always in the meditative state, where your sati and samadhi will make sure you are in the meditative state. Then the mental hindrance cannot arise. So this is what the teaching is all about. When you understand all this, you can develop the meditation. But you check nowadays what is being taught is no longer this understanding. They teach you a lot of other things, mostly thought-based meditation. They come out with method, techniques, and various types of skillful means like chanting, Buddha, and many other things. If you understand what this method, techniques, and skillful means, even chanting and Buddha or whatever it is, then it's okay. Because these are skillful means to train your mind, to anchor your mind, to develop sati. But people don't understand. The reason why all these method, techniques, and skillful means come about is because they cannot keep their mind calm, peaceful. They cannot develop the meditative state when they want to meditate because the mental hindrance are there. So what do? They need something to anchor the mind, to prevent it from wandering off, becoming heedless. That's why they come up with method and technique to focus, to concentrate. But the purpose is actually to develop mindfulness of it. Anchor the mind and be mindful of it, just like anapanasati. The meaning is mindfulness of the in and out breath. Anapana is in and out breath. Sati is mindfulness of in and out breath. It's not to focus on the breath. It's not to do all the other instructions which are not relevant to the training of the mind to be in sati. So all this understanding, if you have developed them, then you will know how to screen through and develop the appropriate way to meditate. Then all the method, technique, and skillful mean become meaningful, no harm, because people don't know the actual way to develop it. Instead of developing the five spiritual faculty so that their mind is in the meditative state, but they can't, because they don't know this teaching. So the mental hindrance prevent them from becoming peaceful. And because of that, they come out with various types of method, techniques, and way to anchor the mind, to fix the mind, to create thought-based meditation, energy field, one-pointedness, absorption, jhana, everything. So this is where the lack of understanding can cause deviation. So this aspect, tonight I explain it, hopefully you all can develop the understanding so that you will not be gullible anymore. So this is to make things very clear. Okay. So now we will continue on the next section. The next section is very interesting. I think Xianhua decided to share some of the story. Yeah? Okay, one thought of arrogance. So this is the next sharing. Yeah? In China during the Han Dynasty, there was an official named Yuan Nan, who out of jealousy murdered another officer named Cao Cao. Later that night, he saw the ghost of Cao Cao coming to kill him, and he realized his mistake and left the home life to become a bhikkhu. After he left the home life, the ghost quit bothering him. He then resolved resolutely cultivate Zen meditation and practice the way. Because he never met the ghost again during his life, he made a vow. I murder a person, he said. I vow that in my future life, I will again be a monk and not an official. Accordingly, in his next life, he was a monk. Not only was he a monk, he was a great Dhamma master who went everywhere to lecture the sutra. He did not seek fame or profit either, but cultivated intensely and coveted nothing. During all this time, he met no more ghosts. In this way, he passed through 10 lifetimes and accumulated a bit of virtue. In every life, he rose higher and higher until in his 10th life as a bhikkhu, he became a national master, the emperor's teacher. One day, the emperor presented him with a seat of carved loose wood. It was a priceless gift, for ordinarily, only the emperor could sit on such a seat. No one else had the status, not even the highest ranking officer or officials. When the national master sat in his beautifully carved chair, he got a bit carried away. He thought, how many Dhamma masters are there able to do this like me? Are there any as high? The emperor sent me this chair, this wonderful chair. Arrogantly, he figured, in the heaven and on earth, I alone am honored. Although this is what the Buddha said when he was born, the national master was not a Buddha. That single thought of arrogance laid him open for an attack by the ghost of Cao Cao, which had been following him around for the past 10 lifetimes. What do you think happened? His leg immediately broke out with a saw, and it's no ordinary saw. It looked like a human head, a human face. He has eye, ear, a nose, and a mouth, and could even talk. He demanded to be fed, and would only eat meat. Unless a piece of meat was placed on it, it would be unbearably painful. It would talk to the national master to say, you want to get away from me? But you can't. You will never get away because I'm determined to take your life. The national master, whose name was Wu Ta, was helpless. He recited the Surangama Sutta and the Great Compassionate Mantra. But because of his coming obstruction, they were so heavy, he got no response. His arrogant thought had caused the Dhamma protector to refuse to protect him and allow the vengeful ghost to gain hold. So his mantra didn't work. It wasn't that the mantra didn't work exactly, but his coming obstacles were just too heavy. overpowering. Luckily, before he got the saw, Dharma Master Wuta had taken care of the Venerable Kanaka. When his entire body has broken out in filthy soil, with stings, ran with pus, and were crawling with worms, National Master Wuta nursed the Venerable Kanaka back to health, feeding him and preparing medicine for him. But was the Venerable Kanaka really ill? No. He deliberately appeared to be sick in order to set up the condition to save National Master Wuta. In the future, no matter what great difficulty you ran into, no matter what insolvable problem you may come to see me in Sichuan, to such and such a place, and I will think of a way to help you. So when he realized he had no way to cure his soul, National Master went to Sichuan to see the Venerable Kanaka. Then the Venerable Kanaka washed the soul with samadhi water, and the sickness was immediately cured. He who cultivated the way, no matter what, must never be arrogant. So that is the warning. Huh? Don't be arrogant. Huh? So the saying here is very beautiful. Huh? Then the next one is living beings Dhamma, Buddha Dhamma, and Mind Dhamma. So these two are different. Huh? The Buddha Dhamma and Mind Dhamma. Then there is also the living beings Dhamma. The Dhamma of living being is wonderful. The Buddha Dhamma is also wonderful, and the Mind Dhamma is also wonderful. The Mind Dhamma is just living beings Dhamma because they are from the mundane mind. The living being Dhamma is just the Buddha Dhamma, if you understand. The Buddha Dhamma is just the Mind Dhamma before it developed the understanding. These three Dhammas are actually one Dhamma. The one Dhamma is all the three Dhamma. Why do I say this? Because it's wonderful. Above we explain why the Mind Dhamma is wonderful. Now we will talk about the wonder of the Dhamma of living being. We are living being. Sorry, what are living beings? So this is a question. Huh? They are collective body and all body of all creatures who have lifespan. There are 12 groups of living beings. So this one is category by the sutra. Huh? The first category of living being is those egg born, then womb born, moisture born, transformational born, those with form, those without form, those with thought, those without thought, those not totally endowed with form, those not totally lacking form, those not totally endowed with thought, and those not totally lacking thoughts. Each of these 12 groups also have many subdivisions. For example, there are many different kinds of beings born of eggs. Some beings born of egg can fly and some cannot. And the egg-born beings, they can fly. And of the egg-born beings that can fly, there are thousands of different species. No one could ever determine exactly how many different species there are. Isn't that wonderful? Of course, if you could determine the numbers, that would also be wonderful. The same applies to the 11 remaining group. Take for example, beings born from the womb. Human beings are born from wombs, and so are animals. The Surangama Sutta discusses the 12 group in detail. It says, beings born of eggs are born of thought. Beings born from womb are born because of emotion. Everyone assumes that the emotions of love is extremely blissful. In reality, within this extreme bliss, the most painful of events take place. In America, a lot of people have awakened to the fact that the emotion of love involves a lot of freedom. Oh, sorry, it was a lack of freedom. However, they misunderstand the underlying principle and go to the opposite extreme. In their quest for freedom, they become promiscuous. Their newfound freedom is just a mistake on top of another mistake. Although marriage limits one's freedom, it still fulfills the most primitive or primary relationship between human beings. To refuse to take on the responsibility of marriage and indulge in causal sexual relationship will ruin one's body and hasten one's death. For example, nowadays, there are some long-haired young men and women who cautiously indulge in promiscuous relationship. I'm not scolding anyone, but such behavior is worse than that of animals, pigs and dogs. At least pigs and dogs have a mating session, but these people indulge in licentious conduct day and night in each other's home or houses, or even in public. The world is being increasingly morally degenerate day by day. If this situation is not quickly remedied, it will cause great harm to society. Animals are also born because of emotion. Emotion comes from habits deeply ingrained throughout limitless eons. If as a person, one's emotion and desire is weighty, one will fall into the realm of animal. Where heavily burdened with emotion and desire, one will still not wake up. Moisture-born beings and transformationally born beings are also born because of desire. In fact, in some sense, all beings are born because of emotion. Hence, it is said, true Buddha have ended karma and emptied all emotion. So that is the saying. Ordinary beings have heavy karma and confusing emotion. That's why common people are deluded by their emotions. If you can see emotion as empty, then that is sagehood. There are thousands of different kinds of beings, and yet, of all the 12 groups, not a single one is excluded from the wonderful Dhamma. All are included within the living beings' Dhamma. Therefore, the living beings' Dhamma is also wonderful. Yeah, this is the truth. This is the reality. Reality of life and existence. Once you look into it, you will realize that each class of creature has its own reason for being. Why are people people? Why are dogs dogs? Why are pigs pigs? How does one become a horse or a cow? The wonderful Dhamma is behind all this happening. You ask, but why is there a wonderful Dhamma? The reason for all these things are difficult to understand, and yet this difficulty is itself the wonderful Dhamma. You say, well, I understand them. Your understanding is also wonderful Dhamma. The wonderful Dhamma is an inconceivable state, and this inconceivable state is just the way things are. That's why suchness, yeah? The reality, on the part of living beings. So this one will have its meaning accord with what Sister Ingby come out with. What is wonderful Dhamma, or real wonderful Dhamma. Oh, wonderful. Now, to discuss the wonder of the Buddha Dhamma, what is the Buddha Dhamma? What is not the Buddha Dhamma? All Dhammas are the Buddha Dhamma. There is not a single Dhamma which is not the Buddha Dhamma. How many Buddha Dhammas are there? In general, there are 84,000 Dhammadhammas. Which of the 84,000 Dhammadhammas is the most wonderful? All of them are the most wonderful. Once I answered the question by saying, whichever Dhammadhamma is of no use to you is the least important. Sorry, I read again. Once I answered this question by saying, whichever Dhammadhamma is of no use to you is the least important. Whichever Dhammadhamma suits you best is the most important. It depends on your disposition. The 84,000 Dhammadhammas were taught as antidotes for the 84,000 afflictions and problems of living beings. If you have no problem, then none of the Dhammadhammas are useful for you. If you still have problem, however, if you are beset with affliction and arrogance or ignorance, then whichever Dhammadhammas that cure your disease is the foremost Dhammadhamma. Therefore, there are 84,000 Dhammadhammas, and 84,000 of them are number one. 84,000 are the highest and the most supreme. Now, speaking in terms of the wonders of the Buddha Dhamma, I will tell you that of the 84,000 Dhammadhammas, 84,000 of them are all most wonderful. Why do I say that? The Vajra Sutta say the Dhamma is level and equal, with no distinction of high and low. All the Dhammas are like prescription written to cure specific illness. A good prescription will cure you. A wrong prescription may injure you. When used incorrectly, good medicine turns into deadly poison. So this one is very obvious. Eh? So before I continue with the next section, which is page 50 of the hard copy, note on eating meat, I would like to maybe explain a bit from a slightly different approach. The three types of Dhamma that Master Xuanhao mentioned, the living being Dhamma, the mind Dhamma, and the Buddha Dhamma. So what is normally taught from my sharing that you hear of is form Dhamma. You remember? Form Dhamma. Then from form Dhamma, you go to my Dhamma. Then from my Dhamma, you go on to the Buddha Dhamma or the true penetrative Dhamma, awakening Dhamma. So form Dhamma is for normal living beings because they perceive external form. That is the mundane seeing. That's why they attach to form outwardly because they can't see mind. So form Dhamma create a lot of conflict, argument, misleading type of information because they were attached to form. Based on the external form, they create division, they create misunderstanding, conflict, argument, and all these things. So form Dhamma is not the true Dhamma, and they cannot see clearly the unreality of form. Because form, like the Buddha said, the first aggregate of form and mind, five aggregate of form and mind, is actually impermanent, dependent originating, condition arising. So if you cannot see that form is impermanent, then you cannot realize the truth, the unreality of form. But there are two aspects to see form. The direct perception. So when you see form using your mundane mind through the direct perception is mundane seeing. Then everything like arise already, real, exists already. But how you come to know that form? The knowing part is always from the mundane mind, the thinking mind. That's why it will lead you to mind Dhamma. So that's what happened during the six patriarchs era, when the six patriarchs came out from the hunters and he wanted to visit this monastery, the famous, I think, what is the name of the monastery? Is it Nan something? Nan what? Nan Hua Si, I think so, yeah, where he actually was asked by the abbot, because there were two Samanera monks there debating. One said the flag move, the other said the wind move. So these two were arguing. They're winning because he understood. He wanted to let them understand so that they can move forward. So he told them, it's neither the wind or the flag move. Your mind moved. Why did he say that? The Huineng knew. They were at the form level. That's why perception of form is consciousness. Huineng knew. It's the mundane mind. But because these monks are very young monks, they haven't developed the Dhamma understanding. That's why the first level of seeing is mundane seeing, form seeing. That's why they argue over form. Then when Huineng mentioned that, they were surprised. Then the abbot knew. He said, who are you? How come you can have such profound understanding and wisdom? So when this was spoken, the abbot suspect, are you the one that inherited the fifth patriarch's bath and robe that went south? So Huineng, I think he said, yes, I'm the one. Then to prove, he showed the abbot the robe and the bath and the insignia to prove that he is the one. That's why after that, there were joy. Then they ordained him. And at the same time, they asked him to teach and deliver the true Buddha Dharma. So the reason why Huineng spoke about this is because to teach living being, initially you have to start with the level they are at. If they can't even see form, the unreality of form, then how can they see beyond form? Just like the form Dhamma that I taught you all. Form is dependent originating, condition arising, impermanent. You attach and cling, it leads to suffering. Then the other aspect is, how do you know that form? It is through mind, consciousness. The mundane mind. So when you realize that externally is already dependent, originating, condition arising, impermanent, not what you think, so that itself is the unreality of mind. Then how do you know that that is the external form? Through consciousness. And what is consciousness? Mind state. It's just an energy field, consciousness, and it's content when you perceive it. So like the Buddha said under the analogy of the blockade, he said externally that form is condition arising, dependent originating, not so real. Then how do you know? Is an external form, from your mind's perception, And what is perception? It's just an image in your mundane mind. It's even more unreal. That's why when you see all this, you will come to realize the unreality of form, the impermanent characteristics of form. That's why you will be able to see form. You will be able to see the unreality of form. Then only can you see beyond form. Then all external form will fail to have power over you, to deceive you, to cause delusion in you. So because of that, Huineng moved them to the next level of inquiry, understanding. He said, neither the flight nor the wind move. It's your mind that moves. You don't perceive through your mind, there is nothing, no movement. Well, originally there was nothing. But since they cannot see form, they have to learn to go beyond form. That's why the first stage of understanding or teaching that Huineng is interested in is bring them to understand the next level of seeing, which is mind dhamma. So that you are not trapped at the external form. You go within to see how your mundane mind through memory, conditioning, perception created the internal form. And this form is just an image, even more unreal. So that's how the teaching goes. Then when you look at the mind, dhamma, it's the same. Form is just a perception, an image, consciousness. That's why the Surangama Sutta say, perception of form is consciousness. Then the second part, whereas it's non-perception, is wisdom. And that is the meditative understanding. The third level of seeing. When you see beyond form and beyond mind, you see the truth. You see the reality. That's why Kan San, Si San, second level of seeing, Kan San, Bu Si San, because the direct seeing. Then the third level of seeing, Kan San, Yu Si San, you go back to normality again. So Huineng taught them the second stage, which is to go to the mind, to be aware of your internal mental aggregates. Feeling, perception, sankhara or emotion, views and opinion, and consciousness. So these are the mind dhamma that you have to see. Mindfulness of the aggregates of mind and how the external form enters the mind and becomes the five aggregate of form and mind, the second aspect, to become a thought. That is what the teaching is all about. So after Huineng gave them the hint, they developed the understanding. Then he will go on to teach them to see mind, the unreality of mind. Then how to see beyond mind, to see the reality, the truth. That's why the story continued. After that, later, after the sixth period, already parinibbana, there was a group of monks who were cultivating. Then they were discussing this topic of the flag and the wind. Then there was a lady who was already enlightened. This lady already enlightened, and she can read the minds of the monks. So the monk initially was already suspicious and curious. How come every day the food that was delivered to them, prepared by this lady, is the food that they think of and they wanted to eat? Then they said, never mind. We continue to discuss that topic. So they try to understand why Huineng said the mind move. Because in the second poem that Huineng actually tear apart the Sensius initial poem, it's very clear that Huineng has realized the true mind, has gone beyond the mundane mind. But then, why did he move? The koan or advise the samanera to develop the maidam. So under this particular story or sharing in the scripture, it seems the monks were discussing this topic and asked, why did Huineng say the mind move? Of course, some of the monks developed some form of understanding, but not penetrative, maybe knowledge-wise. Yeah, it's the mind. Without mind, how can you perceive? How can you bring the external form into the mind? Maybe that one they know. Then while they were discussing this, the lady passed by and just prompted them, where got mind? The moment she said that, almost all of the monks become enlightened because they were still dwelling with the mundane mind. They didn't use the true mind. So upon that sentence or stanza, they straight away awaken. That's why that is to go beyond mind. The first hallmark of Huineng, Wu Nian. That's why where got mind? When there is no more mind Dhamma, the true Dhamma appear. That's why you have to go beyond thought, beyond mind. You have to transcend the mundane mind. You have to transcend even the present moment awareness. You have to cease the mind to realize the unconditioned Nibbana, enlightenment in the here and the now. So this part I just want to share so that you all can have the understanding. Huh? So now we will open up for meditation reporting and Dhamma question. Huh?
There's an incident. Last few days, a friend of mine called me up. She's a Christian and she talked to me about one of her friends that passed away. She came to the topic of a diet. And then she say it's sometimes it's very hard to control the diet because it requires discipline. So when it touched the discipline, then I sort of like talked to her to say, yeah, it's because our mind, you know, it's very easy to be triggered by all the senses, especially when we see something that we like, you see. And that's how we trigger our desire to take and all this. He said, yeah, then how to control and all this kind of thing. Then I continue the topic as it's like mind also, because we have a lot of thought, you see.
Yeah.
And especially when the person have take a lot of snack, you see.
Yeah.
Because his thought is restless. That's why he need to feed his mind, all these things. And then then later, because she also know that I'm doing meditation, you see. Then she say, can meditation train sort of like, you know, the mind? I say, yes, precisely that is what the meditation is doing, you see. It's how to train your mind and you know, so that you can be aware of your senses and your mind, your action, all this kind of thing, you see. So she was very excited, and then even she said that can teach her meditation and those kind of things, you see.
Good.
But the line was, I mean, she was cut off because she got something on to do, you see. So but what interest me was that I was quite surprised that I'm able to tell her the whole thing, you see. Because last time, if you were to ask me, I was just only able to talk piece and pieces. Now I can tell her the purpose, the main purpose the meditations.
Because you have clarity now. You have better understanding now. That's why you can express it out. then do whatever sharing at the level you are at, which is compared to last time, you don't know what is going on. But when you don't have the full picture of what this teaching is, you cannot share, you cannot teach, you cannot even explain to people. It's just like suddenly somebody asks you, hey, you Buddhist? Oh, you meditate? What is this Buddhist teaching all about? You find it very difficult to explain. Then what is meditation? Even worse, even more difficult. So a lot of such questions, if you don't have the cultivation and the understanding, you cannot answer. It is very, very difficult. That's why you need to go through, develop the stability of understanding through contemplation, reflection, and actual silencing your mind to see all those teachings, the essential Dhamma for yourself. Then, like Chin Hao said, is to develop the training of the mind to be aware, so that you can be aware of what is going on within your own mind. We call it form and mind, but they cannot understand. But you say what is going on within your mental thinking or activity, or how you become what you are. So these are easier expression to let normal people understand, but they don't have Buddhist foundation or Buddhist teachings exposure. So it's not easy to express something that people are completely new to, especially if the topic is very new to them. If they have Christian background, then you want to explain Buddhism or essential Buddhist teaching to them. It's not easy unless you really have developed the wisdom and the understanding, and you have clarity, and you can explain it very differently. Yeah, but not easy. So for what you have done is good, Chin Hao. Huh? Sadhu is a good initial step. Mm. Then what else?
Yeah, I can link. I mean, what I benefit the most is like, it actually sort of like reconstruct, you know, all the things that I've learned, is it?
Yeah.
And it put all the pieces into a puzzle, into a complete puzzle. So it actually, I think, rather than telling to her, but it's also telling to myself, is it?
Yeah.
What is meditation?
Yeah.
And reconstruct all my learnings for the past. Yeah. So yeah, that really benefited me a lot, you
see. So they were very good.
And recently I've been doing meditation in lying down and also sitting meditations. And I suddenly have a realization that whether it is sitting or lying down, the key purpose is to train our awareness.
Yeah. And that one is the most important. The rest are secondary.
I suddenly have this realization that it just pour out, is it?
And that will keep you on focus, so that when you develop the meditation, whether you are sitting or you are doing the lying down, it's no different. You are there to develop awareness-based meditation. So awareness-based meditation is to train your mind to be aware and to stabilize the awareness. Well, unless the awareness nature can be realized, means you can realize your true mind, your silent mind, you can never progress in the actual cultivation. The actual cultivation can only start when you develop the ability to silence your mind, to have a glimpse of what that true mind is. Then how, with the awareness and mindfulness, you are able to see your reaction to sense experience, your emotion, your views, opinion, and conditioning. Then how, every moment of consciousness, when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, tactile feel something, or think of something, then what happens next? there is awareness. When you are aware, there is self-knowledge revealing to you clearly who are you, what are you, and how you function as a human being. Then when you see all this clearly, then you understand, no wonder the Buddha said, this form and mind, the five aggregate of form and mind, the two aspects, including the thought, they are dependent originating, condition arising, cause of knowledge. That's why they are impermanent. And because they are impermanent, it's non-self, empty, not a permanent unchanging entity, not me. Then if I attach and going one thing's my way, which is not nature's way, I will suffer. So this is what meditation is all about. To develop the self-awareness, to develop this clarity of understanding of who you are, what you are, and how you function as a human being, and see clearly for yourself what the truth is. Then when the truth dawns upon you, you suddenly like wake up. No wonder the Buddha keep on saying, this fire aggregate of form and mind, the human being, is not me. It's impermanent. That's why you learn to see form, the unreality of form. Then see beyond form. Then be mindful of the mundane mind. Then see clearly mind. Then see the unreality of mind, how they come and go, how they arise and they pass away. But you didn't die. So if they arise and pass away and you didn't die, then who are you? What are you? Means the aggregates of mind, feeling, perception, sankara, and minyanang, they are not you. If they are you, they arise and pass away, you should die with it. But you didn't die. That's why the Buddha said, these are dependent originating, condition arising entity, not intrinsic to your true mind, your true need. Then you will realize from there everything arises. That's why finally you will come to realize if they are not you, then how come they arise in you? Then you will come to know it's from that nature all things arise. That's why the Buddha said, mind is a forerunner of all things, mind is chief. When mind arises, all things arise. Then you start to link the full picture, like you say, the zigzag path will become clearer and clearer and clearer. Then from there, you can actually develop the joy, the understanding. Then you will develop the virya to continue to cultivate. Then your sati, when it's stabilized, it develops into samadhi and you will progress. Then there is so much joy. Then the cultivation will take off. Then you become very different. So this is a very good initial step and understanding for you, right, Jinhao? So listen to this again, then go into it deeper. Listen to more Dhamma, then reflect, contemplate, and write it down. Learn to write it down so that if you can write it down and go through it, then stabilize the understanding. Then later on, without looking at anything, if you can still develop the understanding to explain and express it, means it has stabilized in you, then your cultivation has actually really progressed and you will become different. But first and foremost, sati has to be established, stabilized. The daily mindfulness, the religious routine, the bodhisattva vow and all those things, you have to develop them. Then all this will happen. So, okay, sadhu to you. Anything else?
Yeah, maybe I'll just talk about my recent meditation reporting.
Yes.
So, I notice I do fall asleep, you know, in lying down meditations. But now, it's much lesser, is it? And then I can stay awake the whole sessions. And I notice, I can detect sometimes, you know, the stiffness in the certain part of the body,
mm.
even though I relax, you see.
Mm.
So when I aware about that, I just, you know, maybe do a little bit of adjustment of my body posture, and I realize that the relaxation go a bit deeper, and that it will help me to sort of like somehow, you know, the heartbeats also get subtle, you see, much less not so easy to not so loud
not
like
so
last time,
violent.
Yeah,
not so violent, so violent.
Yeah, and but again, it is still, you know, the thought is still constantly come and go. It's just that, you know, if I can recall, it's that I just need to be patient, you know, just to be silent with it, stay in my heart, is it?
Yeah,
I recall correctly, is it?
Yeah, continue to be aware, don't try to know. Then the shift of consciousness will come. When you are patient and suddenly your mind becomes very quiet, very quiet. Then when the shift arises, your awareness nature will surface. Then you will know the mind without the mundane activity or the what they call agitation. All this, they will cease. That's why without the mental hindrance, without the sankhara activity, without the mind creating any doubt or wanting to know, all these are the factors that you need for the mind to settle down, for the sankhara activity to slow down, for your mind to not dwell, not cling, not hold on to anything. That's why you don't want to know anything. You don't want to do anything. You just let things be. Then all this activity of mind, which are normally the mundane thinking, the mental hindrance, the daily activity that you have gone through, because there is no order. You lack the stability of spiritual faculty and the stability of daily mindfulness. That's why this movement will be there. It's okay, let it arise. But you have to be patient to allow it to be. Let it be. Then whatever emotion or whatever fear or anxiety or what arise, be at peace. Be with it. Just silent. Stay with it. Even the strong, what they call very violent throbbing of the heart, be aware. Stay with it. Don't dislike it or do anything. Just stay with it. Allow it to be, like Colin developed the understanding. Be with it. When your awareness is with that thing, it will create the understanding and the condition for it to slow down, because you are not feeding it with any more thought energy. So that phase, many people cannot clear, cannot pass through, but they want to know. They introduce the thinking, then they develop the curiosity, the inquiry. Am I doing it correct? Is this what Brother Theo means? Or is this what the Buddha meant? Is this the thing that I supposed to realize? So all these are the interference from the thought. Don't do any of this. That's why I say when you meditate, don't try to know. Don't try to do anything. Just relax. Maintain awareness for as long as you can. When you maintain awareness, everything will start to slow down. Where you don't create any more thought energy for it to think, to proliferate. No more confusion, no more restlessness, no more worry, fear, or wanting to know. So all this, when they cease to be, means the mental hindrance cease to be. And what happens after that is beautiful. Where sati will take over. And sati is just that silent inner awareness before the arising of thought. That's why you must go through that phase until all thoughts cease. Whatever arise, let it arise. Then it will slowly, slowly slow down and finally cease. You have to experience that shift of consciousness and that initial quieting. I call it the quiet quietening of mind, the mind becomes very quiet. Now at that stage, it cannot cease yet. Cessation needs a lot of stability and understanding and wisdom. Then only even the glimpse of cessation is also not easy. That one you need to reflect, contemplate, and silence your mind until very stable, until the Dhamma becomes very clear. And then suddenly the condition fall into place. Then all this can happen. So today the sharing is for you, right? You know, you go back, listen, and just do, right? Don't try to know. Because it's not easy to go into the next phase. But once you go into the next phase, you will progress very fast and you will understand all these things later on. Okay? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why suddenly I have a very deep gratitude. See?
Yeah.
And really, I very, I think we are very, very fortunate that really to meet Brother Teo, I mean, and also to listen to all this beautiful, wonderful Dhamma. I don't know what to say.
It's okay, because when you have the understanding and the faith, it will drive you. That is more important. That's why faith is very important. From there, the virya come, like PG. Then she has strong mind, very determined. So you develop that strong mind and determine and go all out to cultivate. And like Po Cheng say, follow instruction. Don't add anything. Don't try to know. Don't try to do anything. Just relax, maintain awareness until the awareness nature stabilizes, until the shift of consciousness happens. Then you will start to understand what that true mind is, what that silent mind is. Then how come everything can become so quiet, so still? Then like suddenly, no thought, no movement, nothing. But there is still pure awareness inside there. It's like suddenly all the water that you see in the pool or the lake, the ripple all gone. The water becomes very quiet, very still. You must go through that. Then once you go through that, you will realize what that nature is, what that silent mind is, what that pure awareness nature is, that true mind. Then from there, thinking arises very fast. Perception arises very fast. Contact arises very fast. Then after contact, what happened? Because you are aware, you can see. You just let it happen. You are like a witness. Just the awareness nature, observe. There is no one behind to see, to observe. Just the awareness nature, aware, finish. Aware, finish. And that is what meditation is all about. When the awareness nature is aware, that is the one that can develop understanding, awakening. And sometimes it just triggers awakening. Insight into phenomena, then all of a sudden the Dhamma becomes clear because the condition is there. So all this is what the cultivator need to go through. Then after that, when it stabilized, there are other things that you will experience. Okay? Sadhu to you.
I also want to thank Brother Song. You see? So that's why I mean in Avijja Sutra, like associate with the right Kayamita, are very, very important. You see? So like today we have a very good conversations over the food, you see. And then he repointed some of the a lot of key things that you know I need to be aware of, you see. Like in one of the daily life activity, I need to make an effort to take it as an exercise to anchor my mind, so that that will help me to develop the mindfulness in a better way. So and like chanting or bowing or when I'm taking bath or eating the time, you know, just one of these routine things to say as an exercise for me to anchor, see. So I think that is very, very important, and I think it's about determination, see. Yeah. And also, like, you know, listen to the recording, you see. So with that, I also, you know, listen to some of the talk that you have mentioned, you have given advice to me, and I suddenly thought that, hey, there are so many points that I missed out, you see. So like what you say, you really have to write it down, you see.
So that it can develop into stable understanding. You don't write it down, you cannot understand. Yeah, you think you know, but you have not got the thing. But when you try to write it down, you realize initially it's so difficult, the words like cannot come out. But once you are able to write it down, then you read again, the word become different again, because you have not developed the stability of cultivation. And you don't have that strong pass that can pick up all this very fast. The other thing about daily mindfulness is you have to start from your daily routine. Initially is when you are at home doing your daily religious routine, when you are not involved with like the public, your driving, or when you are in the office, when you interact with people, that one more difficult. That one you need stability or mindfulness to develop it. So initially is your daily religious routine when you are alone, your bowing, your respect to Triple Gem, your meditative training until the mind enters the deep. Then when you come out of it, the awareness, develop it, stabilize it. Everything maintain awareness. So to anchor your awareness, initially, I remember the best way is to go back to your heart. Go back to your heart. Go back to your heart. Aware from there out. Aware from there out. Then you have certain mudra that can make you aware. You move it. You develop it. Like the one I teach you at the retreat. All the awareness-based type of movement. So throughout the day, when you have nothing to do, you just move your hand or go to your breath, relax, maintain awareness, silent. So all these are what mindfulness is all about. That every movement, activity, like when you tilt your head or you blink your eye, maintain awareness. Then when you stretch your hand to take something or to do something, maintain awareness. Don't think. But initially you can't. You will think. But as you train, every time, whatever activity you're aware, then the thinking will slow down. Then suddenly one day you realize, hey, the kaya and your awareness has become one. So the training, I remember initially, is the bowing. Then after that, all your activity, daily mindfulness. That's why we choose aware every action, every movement in the present moment. Then whatever movement, very slight, you anchor to it. So that everything, when you walk, is like the whole bodily movement, the awareness is there. You don't have to slow down. Slowing down, maybe people want to do it at a retreat, it's up to them, but don't need. The slowing down will happen by itself when your sati has been developed. I realize when the sati has been developed, you cannot do things in a rush manner anymore. You already have clarity and the mindfulness and the awareness. The pace is determined by the awareness, not your thought process. And most of the time, you are quiet, silent, just aware. That's why the movement, the activity, the heedfulness all become different. They fall into place by themselves. You no need to try to be aware, determined to be aware. Of course, determined to be aware is okay initially. But after that, Just maintain the awareness. Means return to your heart or determine to be aware. Means once you have developed the ability to be aware, you will know when you are not aware. So like Jay Krishnamurti say, the awareness of inattention is attention. When you are aware that you are not paying attention or you are lost in thought, that itself is attention. Means when you have awareness of in-awareness, means your awareness has come back. That's why attention of inattention is actually attention. So it's the same. When you are aware that you are no longer in sati, that itself is awareness. With that awareness that is aware is the true mind. Then you determine to be aware. From there, everything you do inwardly, aware outside. Then your kaya, anchor to your kaya. So every action, every movement is like a flow. Everything is like a flow. So this is important. So go back and listen to this and write it down. It will help you. Okay, good.
Brother, 我是觉得突然间我这两天我可以讲讲我以前我每次是aware的时候是可以aware 到就是很多的那个 judging 的那个那个 sankara 在那个judging mind 这两天我是诶怎么我 aware 是怎么没有 judging mind 是比较 silent 的这样的那种 就我也感觉到诶不用做什么就是他就是这样子静静了
想想 OK, then what do you do?
没有就是就我忽然间觉得诶怎么 会很像一个来有一点不一样了跟以前其实那个麦是比较 silent 了就是
yeah.
这样子每次一你静静的时候
but 你要了解 a further understanding because that will only happen initially. So initially when it happens, you will know it's quiet already. But these are all mind state. Different time, different thing happen. Then as you go through life, as condition change, sometimes it may create condition to test you. Then all of a sudden, the sankhara like you experienced before last time, suddenly come back. So all this, you must not have expectation. Because the danger of cultivator is when you go into this, you think you have progressed. You think the sankhara now, last time when you are aware of the chattering and all things, because that time, the true mind hasn't really shined forth, or your daily mindfulness hasn't stabilized. Then your yoniso manasikara hasn't stabilized. But as you continue to have faith and cultivate like what you have gone through, then at certain phase, certain stage, it will show it to you once your yoniso manasikara is very stable, your awareness is stable, then all this chattering, they will slowly, slowly like become very quiet, like no more there. But these are conditions that will arise. It doesn't mean that forever you will be like that. Unless your mundane mind collapses already, then it's different. Otherwise, this condition will keep on evolving, moving. So don't be trapped by the conditioning that believe, oh, now I have gone through this cultivation. I have progressed. Now my sankhara is less ready. Then after a few months or maybe a few days, suddenly the mind becomes back to normal, very wild. Then you panic. Then you doubt. Then you start to analyze again. Then you start to inquire again. Because it's not about how your mind state should be. It's about how you develop the understanding. When that thing has gone back to like maybe the earlier condition where you start to see the chattering hours here, sometimes it's a test. It's to test you, to find out whether you are disturbed or not. That you go and analyze and you go and develop the what they call reasoning. Then try to fix that. That is where people go wrong. Don't do that, because just let it be. Laugh it out. Whatever will be, will be. That is the reality. Condition like that, things will like that. Once you are able to accept that reality, then you realize your mind is different. Then that one will stabilize your understanding. Then it will have no way to delude you and deceive you, and you will pass the test. Then after that, that transformation become very different. Then the understanding also become very different. So all this, you have to develop understanding. That's why I say the key to meditation is still, don't try to know too much. Whatever happened, it will be there with you, with your nature. So just note and allow it to be. Just let it pass. Condition like that, things will be like that. Then when you stabilize all this understanding already, as you progress, you become more and more experienced and you have more and more understanding. Then later on, when people like come to you to discuss Dhamma, you will know what to do. Then you will know why he is what he is, or she is what she is. At that stage, she will say this type of thing and do this stuff. Then you are in the position to guide them. Otherwise, you can't. Otherwise, you yourself also maybe equally confused, because you also doubt. So all this doubt leading to reasoning and analysis of what happened and try to fix it is actually another delusion. Because the truth is nothing free except wisdom. When the wisdom is there, whatever happened to your mind, whatever mind state, that is the reality. That's why the Buddha says suchness, tatata. So what is real wonderful. So accept. No need to like hold on to all this. So like what you have gone through, you can describe no problem. You realize it's more quiet and interesting. But this is just at this moment, that's not so. Eh? This condition behind. Later on, it can be different. That's why it's a living Dhamma. It's dynamic. It is wisdom that makes the mind develop understanding and act. Without wisdom, a lot of what they call doubt will arise. How come last time I can do my mind like that? Now, it is no longer like that. So all these are from the thought. The thought that want to analyze why. The thought that wants to reason. They want to fix this type of thing. What is there to fix? Whatever that arise, like the Buddha say, there are causes and conditions. Our meditative training is to see all this and understand all this. That's why I know sometimes it's a test. And sometimes condition like that, things will be like that. Just let it be. Echo and flow, silent everything and be with it. Then you will pass through beautifully. Can follow eh? This part. So this is the part you need, I think. Because these are the stability of understanding that you need as you move through this phase of cultivation.
Okay? 就刚才你讲那个你的这些 point, 又让我 又很像一个 reminder 给我。
Especially 因为你有那个 habitual tendency of like holding on to progress. And you tend to have this within your background conditioning without you knowing. You tend to hold on to all the thinking that you have developed it, transformed, and your mind has become different. Then you expect that mind to continue that way. Cannot. Because that is not the thing that is happening. The thing that is happening is this mind. You see, even the Buddha at that time, he told the disciple, even at anagami level, there are five more fetters they haven't break. And what are they? One of them is restlessness of mind. The mind can still become restless. Then the self-conceit, the mana, minor self-conceit, mana, is still there. Then, of course, attachment to form jhana, the calm state, and the formless jhana. They are the fetters that bind the anagami from freeing the mind. So you have to remember this. Then finally, of course, when you break free from all these four fetters, then only avijja can be rooted out. Then when there is no more avijja, your reasoning, your analysis, your thought process all cease because it already collapsed. Or the what they call the mundane mind already cease. That's why with the cessation, when you go through the cessation, you realize the unconditioned, the nibbanic experience. When you come out of it, you become different. You become different. So your whole intent and purpose is to stabilize the understanding and just cultivate. Don't try to know and let the cessation happen longer and longer. Let it manifest on its own. Then you will break free from all this. Then you will progress further. Okay? So?
Sadhu, very dear.
Yeah.
The Virgil 你讲的这个 understanding part 要去 stabilize.
Because the understanding is the one that free you. So forget about whatever happened. Whether the mind state has become different, of course you can describe it like I say. It is part and parcel of cultivation. So before the mundane mind collapse, this thing is still very erratic. Even anagami, the restlessness is there for no reason, like Mahabodhi, they all, they cannot left and right. Suddenly, the Buddha doesn't work. The mindfulness all gone, and his mind, the mundane mind, becomes so wow. You go and read his book, Straight from the Heart and other things. He wrote it there. Then he has to think of a way to subdue that mind. Actually, that is not the way. That's why later on he realized what Achaman told him. Don't go and do all this. Maintain awareness and let things be. That's why the cessation happened. Then he came to realize the primordial, mind, that luminous mind. He go and attach. He think that is the true mind. He think it belongs to him. And honestly, he was so excited about it. But that one also is mind-made, sankhara, illusion, not what you think. These are all stated in the Surangama Sutta. All these are mind state, manifestation. That's why sometimes, even when you meditate at night, suddenly your mind becomes so bright, it's like daylight. You can see everything inside, outside, and all these things. But these are deviant samadhi, defilement of insight, and it will manifest. So if you are not careful, if you don't know that it's only wisdom that awaken and free, then the mind will cling, will grasp, will hold. Then the whole lot of practice become affected, deviate. So all this is just for sharing. Huh? So do listen to all this, it will help. Okay, so sadhu.
现在我比较了解你今天这样一讲，我知道怎样聊。
Very good, Sergeant.
Actually, 你最近这个 accept the reality 的这个sentence 一直在
What is real wonderful？
对，所以我刚才你
那个很重要，所以你能够接受了啊。Once you can come to terms with the reality and be at peace with what is, then you realize there is joy, there is peace, there is happiness. No need to do anything. Then the sankhara, no need to move, no need to arise, because that is the reality. Thing is just the way it is, like the Buddha say, condition like that, things will be like that. So everything is the way it is. So accept, then act. Act with what? Wisdom, understanding, noble eightfold path. Then just live your life. Then experience the pristine beauty and wonders of life. That every moment, every instant, whether according to worldly people, there is no more good meditation, bad meditation, thing must go my way. Even don't go your way also, it is wonderful. That's why everything is wonderful, whether positive or negative, to your expectation or not. But these are mundane minds, craving, attachment, clinging. The reality is, you cannot change. Condition like that, things will be like that. You have to accept and come to terms with that reality first. So no matter what happened, just be with it, silent. And then act, because you have to live life. Then live. Live with awareness and wisdom. Act with wisdom and understanding. That's why I train your mind to be aware, to be heedful. Then live. That's it. So this part take a while, not that easy. That's why not everybody understand what cultivation is. Well, it evolves life, it evolves existence, it evolves understanding the unconditioned and the conditioned Dhamma. So all this is to transcend duality, to transcend what the mundane mind hold on to, like and dislike and all those things. Pleasant and unpleasant. So once all this has been understood, then developed with clarity, then you become different. Then you know the form and mind is just a vehicle and tool for you to come, not you. Then use it to live life. Do not be deluded by it or deceived by it. Then he know you, he know me. Then you learn to accept the reality of everything, where there is no mark, no mark of a self-cultivating, no mark of others, so that you cannot be sad, you cannot be emotional anymore. Because the unconditioned number is such, true emptiness, no mark. And everything is not what you think, no reality. But there is such thing as life, existence, you have to do your duty. And that is the very fine line that people cannot develop and understand. So to live, you have to have wisdom and understanding. Where to live is to perform your duty as a form of mind. Then, of course, you can live life to the fullest. You can experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life. And that is pertaining to the conditioned world, the form of mind. It has its own reality. That's why life can be wonderful, beautiful, because of the understanding from the unconditioned, then also the conditioned Dhamma. So when both has been understood, then that being that have the understanding connected to its nature become different. So that part need a lot of understanding and stability, otherwise you cannot live. You cannot have that type of understanding to realize that truth that the Heart Sutra mentioned, 真空妙有, in true emptiness, there is wonderful existence. That's why the wonderful Dhamma is all about wonderful things. Everything is wonderful, whether it's right or wrong, good or bad, whatever it is, that is the reality. So what is real wonderful. And that is beautiful. That is what the true ultimate Dhamma is. Then whatever we go through, the form and mind, is just a passing segmented life that has the understanding of the Dhamma, do its duty, fulfill its vow, and be a blessing to all. That's all it is. No reality. Hey, no you, hey, no me, no mark. So, all this understanding will take a while to actually stabilize. And the cultivation is very, very beautiful, meaningful, and amazing when you go through the correct understanding and progress. Everything unfolds and becomes so beautiful, and there is so much joy and so much meaning to life, to existence, to cultivation. And all those who have affinity with you, with your nature, they will come, and you will know what to do. That's why all these are very beautiful and wonderful, of course. Okay, so?
Sadhu Bharatiyo,
Sadhu. 还有什么吗?
没有了, 今天,
okay, very good. So let us rejoice. Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.